I think on another occasion, our lecturer could give us a long and interesting talk about the sometimes very sharp lines that were drawn in the Middle Ages between the religious elite, often defined by their quest for wisdom, and the many, the hoi polloi, hamon, who occupied themselves, as the religious elite saw it, with matters of secondary importance. So without casting aspersions on people who may be at their cottages now or other such places, I think we can certainly say that anyone who is here tonight, by definition, is a member of the elite whose quest for wisdom is clearly unquenchable, coming to a lecture in deepest, darkest August and on a weeknight to boot. I don't want to say much by way of introduction. I do want to note that when I thought about possible people to help with the program and to co-sponsor the program, there was a single candidate, and that was Torah in Motion and my good friend Rabbi J. Kelman. He is of the view that precisely when everyone else is on well-deserved vacation, that is the time to double down on Divrei Torah v'Chochmah. And so he kindly assented to join us in this program, so I thank him for his help and his co-sponsorship. In terms of our speaker, again, I would rather hear from him than from me. If anyone saw the flyers that we had posted out front, so you'll know of some of the really remarkable accomplishments, and I could have gone on for paragraphs here. Professor Dov Schwartz, professor of Jewish thought at Bar-Ilan University in Israel, where he served in many capacities, and I'll leave it to you to read about them. I must confess I have somewhat mixed feelings about Professor Schwartz. On the one hand, I've learned a tremendous amount from him over the years. The many books, practically a whole shelf of my library is books by him, and I have a file folder with articles. There are so many things to speak about in terms of his scholarship, its tremendous breadth, books on Jewish thought in the Middle Ages, on through modern Zionist thought, the thought of Rav Soloveitchik, as we'll see or hear tonight, Chabad Messianic lore, and on and on. His powers of synthesis, he can take large topics like messianism, like esotericism, and offer one of those magisterial overviews that provide orientation. So that's the good news. The only reason I have mixed feelings about Professor Schwartz is he's the type of person who makes people like me look bad by comparison. So prolific is he, and so impressive is his combination of breadth and depth. But despite that, I'm very happy that he's here at York University, and curious to see what it means to think about philosophy versus personality, moderate elements in the Messianic lore of Rabbi Menachem and Mendel Schneerson. So without further ado, I give you Professor Schwartz.
Okay, first of all, I thank Professor Weir for his invitation. And York University, as well as everyone here. I feel a great pleasure to talk about my research, and I hope that you'll find some interest in these things. Actually, we are going to meet the link between modernity, between messianism and the law of Chabad, and therefore I think that this is a very interesting topic of itself. So Rabbi Menachem Mendel's unique messianic disposition was based on a series of parameters through which he maintained and reinforced a trend that had begun under his predecessors, Rabbi Shalom Ber and Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak. And I'm going to talk about three such parameters. First, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson attached paramount importance to messianic contemplation. relying on an aphorism attributed to the Besht: wherever a man's thought is, that is where he himself will be. The Rebbe taught that, quote, by thinking of redemption and contemplating it, in particular by expecting and longing for redemption, that is where he himself will be, end quote. The contemplation of redemption creates a metamorphosis in one's personality. A person becomes a redemptive type, acting in the process of redemption and furthering its course. The psychological state of contemplation and expectation becomes a value of itself. Rabbi Menachem Mendel describes a psychological, physical perfection expressed in and symbolized by a single faculty, the thought. This perfection is represented not only by thought. Speaking of redemption is equally significant. Quote, all the limbs are contained in one another. The matter of speech is even more relevant for all the faculties of the soul. End quote. Preoccupation with redemption thus create psychosomatic perfection, a perfect personality. That means that contemplating redemption is a value of itself. To think about redemption is also a value of itself. Second, Rabbi Menachem Mendel's messianic theories were closely associated with his personal view of current events. He was convinced that his messianic thought was relevant to events as they were occurring, that it was in fact interpreting them. To the same degree, he was quite sure of his central role in these events. In that respect, however, he was no different from many thinkers, from Rav Saadia Gaon to Rabbi Yitzchak Abarbanel. I mention it because of from Rabbi Yitzchak Luria Hari to the thinkers of religious Zionism, who considered redemption not in anticipation or prediction of an unknown future, but in the analysis of a currently unfolding process. In a public letter discussing the meaning of the prophet's promise, I will speed it in its time, Da'ita Chishena, Rabbi Menachem Mendel wrote, I quote, I will speed it in time in the simple sense, quantitatively, in an instant, and I will also speed it qualitatively, in spirituality, in the same spiritual state as in the present, without waiting at all for the enhancement of sanctity, as implied by the verse. The commandment is a candle, and the Torah is a light. And even more, redemption, says the Rebbe, is immediate, requiring neither change in the world nor human improvement before it begins. Rabbi Menachem Mendel's repeated assertion that our time is the end of exile, footsteps of the Messiah, and not its beginning, does not detract from the messianic tension and the consciousness of redemptive action. On the contrary, it enhances the tension. And I quote, this very time is already called footsteps of the Messiah. He says that in Hitvaadut in 83-84. Because we already sense, he says, we already sense and hear the sounds of the Messiah's footsteps. The coming of our righteous Messiah is so close that we already hear the steps of the Messiah's feet. End quote. And the third parameter, Rabbi Menachem Mendel adopted a dialectic messianic approach, which enabled his messianic teaching to be flexible in keeping with current events and the leader's personality. In what follows, I shall examine the various dialectic aspects of his thought, but We may even at this stage point out the tension between divine redemption and human initiative, a tension strongly expressed in Rabbi Menachem Mendel's activities. Constantly in the background of his thought was the Haredi view that redemption would come from on high. But he was basically motivated by the idea that, I quote, in the future redemption, the desire to come out of exile and come to Jerusalem will be the desire of Israel, and the redemption from on high is only the redemption through which the desire of Israel will be relieved. So you see how he plays with redemption from high and redemption by human initiation. It comes from high above, but actually we are the one who let it happen. So this is actually a result of two activities. Rabbi Menachem Mendel's awareness thus paved the way for his own messianic activities. I will now examine whether his theoretical teachings did indeed provide an unambiguous basis for such messianic action. Underlying my analysis of Rabbi Menachem Mendel's messianic mind are the following basic assumptions. A. In contrast to his public and political image, the Rebbe's messianic teachings were conservative and moderate. They were based directly on various ideas common to Kabbalistic and Hasidic Lubavitch thought. 1. The revelation of divine presence as a messianic goal. 2. A model of the future as realized in the present. 3. A model of personal spiritual redemption with collective redemption presented as a metaphor. 4. Neutralization of the messianic tension characteristic of Haredi movement. This is a phenomenological argument, by the way. Okay, so these four steps makes the Rebbe's messianic thought very moderate, as I show below. So this was assumption A. B. Despite this, Rabbi Menachem Mendel always believed that he was operating at the threshold of redemption. And C. This orientation was a major factor in the creation of Rabbi Menachem Mendel's unique messianic ethos, that is, his preaching and popularization of Kabbalistic motives and messianic activism. Now, I won't be able to prove all this assumption in the time that we approved for this lecture, but at least some of them. Okay, so we see that from the one hand, the Rebbe offers a very moderate messianic thought, and in the other hand, if we take his personality, he certainly was a soldier in the army of the redemption, actually. He realizes the redemption, although philosophically thinking, he was in another place. Rivka Schatz Uffenheimer once wrote of the thinkers of Hasidism, and I quote, "For the first time in the history of Jewish mysticism, we find here a mature attitude of mystics who discover their own awareness, who knowingly struggle with the historical conceptions of Jewish tradition and unambiguously declare that they have found the way to God despite being in exile." End quote. What was true for the beginning of Hasidism remained valid for the waning years of the 20th century. It should be clear from the start that, as may be demonstrated by a thorough analysis of the elements of Rabbi Menachem Mendel's messianic theories, messianic tensions was not a dominant one. One ideological tactic commonly adopted by leaders and thinkers to alleviate a diaspora life was to demonstrate that some of the benefits of redemption could be enjoyed even in exile. In this way, messianic tension with its attendant dangers could be avoided. There was no need for an upheaval to enjoy the condition of redemption. There were two principal patterns of this trend. The first, the unique spiritual benefits of the redemptive condition are achieved in the present. For example, people will be able to receive divine influence, characteristic of redemption, while still in exile. This idea will be discussed in the present section. And the second, individual spiritual redemption is achievable even in exile. The soul is capable of achieving redemption even while the physical body is still in exile. This pattern will be the subject of the next section. A well-known maxim among Chabad Hasidism is "Make the land of Israel hear." In Yiddish, "Mach du Eretz Israel." It was the Admor Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak who reported the tradition that his predecessor, one of his predecessors, the Tzemach Tzedek, had given this answer to a person who wanted to make aliyah to the land of Israel. The benefits of the land of Israel may be enjoyed while still in exile. The Rebbe exhaustively discussed this tradition. How, he asked, could one enjoy the benefits of the chosen land in exile when many commandments of the Torah cannot be observed anywhere else? Mitzvot atluyot ba'aretz can be observed only in Eretz Israel. So how can we say mach du Eretz Israel? How can we say that let's do Eretz Israel here in exile? What is the meaning of our constant prayers to return to the land, if its benefits are achieved in the diaspora? The answer, he said, was to focus entirely on action in the present. Every religious act that a person performs requires the full concentration of his mind. Preparation for redemption must also be undertaken in the most perfect, focused manner, as if it was not a mere means, but the end itself. And I quote, "The service performed at this moment, in this place, here, must be perfect in relation to the present situation and the present place." As I said before, the contemplation of redemption has a value also of itself. So this is what the Rebbe says here. If you do something, you have to be totally concentrated in its significance. The mind, therefore, must concentrate to the highest possible degree on service performance in exile, in complete disregard to the partial deficient state of the present. This principle is valid even when redemption is imminent. Hence, even when redemption is around the corner, exile is considered as something complete in itself, of independent value. Affirmation of exile, complete concentration on the present situation, are thus valid until the very advent of redemption. Moreover, the Rebbe espoused the basic idea of exploiting the benefits of redemption even in diaspora life. That is, various dimensions of redemption exist in life in exile. One striking example is the application of this idea in temple worship. Speaking of prayer as a substitute for sacrifice in the temple, Rabbi Menachem Mendel declared, and this is source number one in the handout, "Although even in time of exile there is significance to sacrifices, likewise there is also significance to the offering of incense in the present. It is indeed the case with respect to sacrifices that through them one reveals Hamshacha, and even on the surface of the worlds, which is not the case with respect to prayers, which were instituted instead of sacrifices. Through them, divine influence is discovered only in the inner depths of the worlds." The style is a little bit Kabbalist, but popular Kabbalist. This passage reveals an obvious magical orientation. Sacrifices and incense were designed to bring divine light down to the material world. When the temple was standing, the capture of divine influence was both external and internal. In exile, however, divine influence is brought down only internally. Hence, despite of the absence of the temple, divine influence is still being captured on the level of the inner depths of the world. The sensation of a redemptive state in and owing to condition of exile is intensified by the principle adopted by the Rebbe that only the body has gone into exile, not the soul. End quote. Okay, so the body is in exile, but the mind is certainly a disposition for heavenly emanation. Okay, and this technique of bringing down the spirituality, we know that for many years, thinkers use it for magical interpretation. The sacrifices were explained by this technique. And we can put our finger on Rabbi Yehuda Levi and on Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra for this pattern, and the Rebbe used it here, and the conclusion is that being in exile, this process continue happening all the time, but it happens in the inner personality of man and not in the external world. So therefore, when the temple existed, then there was miracles, you know, the 10 miracles that happened, and now there are no miracles, but the process continues. In addition, the Rebbe preached that the Messianic era should already be created in the present. The advent of redemption depends on the present in exile. Consider, for example, his interpretation of an assertion of Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi. And this is in source 2 in the handouts. Ha'admor HaZaken says in the book of the Tanya that the revelations of secret in the future depend on our actions and service throughout the duration of exile, for what causes the reward of a commandment is the commandment itself. That is to say, what we do in the days of the Messiah and the resurrection of the dead is not something separate from the matter of exile, but it is growing that grows from the work of sowing during exile. End quote. Rabbi Shneur Zalman was stating a simple version of the Kabbalistic concept of the ingathering of the sparks. Redemption means that the inner divine vitality of a corporeal object must be restored to its supernal source by observing a commandment. The action described by Rabbi Shneur Zalman is inversely systematic. Fulfillment of the commandment brings down the light of the Ein Sof to the physical world from above to below, and causes its vitality in the object to be absorbed and assimilated in the light of Ein Sof from below to above. This is a formulation of a fundamental theological principle. Redemption depends on the performance of commandments. Rabbi Shneur Zalman meant to say that the ingathering of the sparks is an important activity upon which depends the revelation of the future. And Isuf HaNitzotzot, certain Kabbalistic principle from the Ari and even before. Rabbi Menachem Mendel, however, extracted new meanings from the old Admor HaZaken's words. For him, not only the actual advent of redemption is influenced by human action, but also its form, nature, and quality. Not only does divine worship bring redemption closer, it also affects the nature of that redemption. What is important is not only the fact of action, but also its standards. Rabbi Menachem Mendel accepted the principle underlying Maimonides' interpretation of the Mishnaic statement that the reward of a commandment is the commandment itself, namely, that the quality of reward and punishment after death is autonomous, that immortality is determined by the knowledge that the soul acquired during its material life. In his various articles, Rabbi Menachem Mendel defined paradise as the eternal immortality of body and soul. It is the eternity of matter that implies annihilation of individuality, bitul hayesh, since the vessel, the body, will provide the substrate for divine revelations. Accordingly, Rabbi Menachem Mendel declared that the enjoyment of Torah study in paradise is a direct consequence of the enjoyment experienced during the study of the same laws in this world. Please look at source number 3. Says the Rebbe, but the point is that paradise is the employment of the soul in studying the halachot in spirituality. For those halachot of the lower world, two persons lay hold of a garment, shnayim ochazim betali, and one who exchanges a cow for an ass, ken machlif para bechamor, are study there in spirituality and apprehended the essence of the matter. And that is the meaning of the statement that they enjoy the brilliance of the Shekhinah. And the revelation of paradise is by studying Torah in the lower world. For because in the lower world one studies Torah, thereby one is merited to study and apprehend Torah in paradise. Hence, the reward for religious observance in the eschatological future is not heteronomic. Formally speaking, achievements in the world to come, Olam Haba, are no different from achievements in the lower world. Indeed, study in the world to come will focus on revealing the inner spiritual essence of the halacha, but the level of revelation depends on the level of the study in the lower world. The Rebbe believes that the autonomous reward will include not only the study of Torah, but also the performance of the commandment. Okay? And I quote, similarly in regard to the commandments, that the sparks will also be redeemed by the action of the commandments in corporeal things. End quote. Here he departs from Maimonides' doctrine that only the secrets of science and philosophy are the source of immortality. Nevertheless, he does adopt the Maimonidean idea that the future recompense for piety involves no additional dimension. Okay, that means that the world of redemption is actually being prepared in these days. I mean, we're thinking about the future, we're thinking about immortality, but what we do refers directly to what will be. And actually, what will be in the future is actually happening right now. That means we are talking about redemption, we're talking about what happens in the last days, but actually we're preparing now what will happen then. That means that you cannot divide it between what will be in the future. You cannot totally divide between what will be in the future and what happens right now. To the same degree, redemption is autonomously determined by human action, and its progress and nature are therefore not preordinate. And I quote, the revelations of the future are not an independent matter, end quote. And Rabbi Menachem Mendel goes to say, But the continuation and consequence of the service of exile, the growth that results from service in exile. He seems to blur the distinction between the different stages of exile and redemption. Redemption is realized in the context of exile, just as the presence of the Messiah is already sensed paradoxically in the, I quote, the footsteps of the Messiah, before his coming. Finally, it should be mentioned that the Rebbe agreed with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Maharal of Prague that exile was not a natural feature of the Jewish character. Paradoxically, however, owing to the hope of redemption, exile does not cause dissent, God forbid and heaven forfend, in the Jew. End quote. Here too, we found the pattern of redemption in exile. The hope for redemption, a natural characteristic in life in exile, preserves the Jew's level. The Jew's perfection does not depend on whether he is in a state of exile or redemption. In the final analysis, I quote, redemption is already here and it only has to be revealed. End quote. Now I want to say a few words about the idea of the tzaddik. The idea of tzaddik is central to emergence of the concept of redemption in exile. As might be expected, the tzaddik's part in the process of evolving redemption is beyond doubt. Rabbi Menachem Mendel was constantly speaking of the status of the Admor, since, I quote, the Nasi is everything. And of course, he is the Nasi. He is the president. While he was careful to apply this statement to his predecessor, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, it is clear that the Nasi of the generation, including the Rebbe's own generation, is a reflection of the entire generation. The tzaddik experiences exile and redemption at all times, wherever he is. The release of Admorim from prison in Russia and from persecution by oppressed governments from Rabbi Shneur Zalman to Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, who was imprisoned in Bolshevik Russia, is a kind of redemption. As Rabbi Menachem Mendel wrote, and you can see it at source number 4, the redemption is an immediate disposition, a channel, and a vessel to draw down the redemption in general of all the children of Israel, wherever they may be. And since in the redemption of the 12th of Tammuz, each and every Jew was redeemed, and not only the Rebbe, not only the Rabbi Shneur Zalman and Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, including those who are only called Jews, according to what is known, that all redemptions belong to one another, since they are all called redemption, one must say that through the joy in celebration of the redemption, there will be also be an enhancement of the future redemption. Thus, the tzaddik's redemption is a messianic microcosm, reflecting the redemption of the national community and of a world as a whole. The Rebbe treats the tzaddik's redemption, which took place in historical time, as a paradigm, a model for the future redemption as well. Thus, there are distinct dimensions of redemption even in exile, in the figure of the tzaddik. In another sense, however, the Rebbe explained that the imprisonment of Chabad leaders in itself could not be considered as a perfect reflection of exile. In actual fact, this was a purely surface affair. At depth, the leaders of the Chabad movement has never been imprisoned. That means it was like an illusion. Actually, they were not imprisoned. We thought that it was, and we looked, and our senses approved that they were imprisoned, but actually they were not, because the spirit was free. The tension between the internal and external worlds is thus double. Surface reality, imprisonment, exile, does not reflect inner, deep reality, freedom and redemption. Just as the tzaddik was free in prison, one can live a redemptive life in exile. The release of the tzaddikim from prison is thus a perfect paradigm of redemption. An approach of this sort means that the messianic thrust is blunted. Phenomenologically speaking, redemption here and now implies a certain neutralization of the messianic idea. In the last two decades of the Rebbe's activity, however, the direction was reversed. His sensation of imminent redemption re-emphasized to the model of redemption already realized in the present, giving prominence to national cosmic redemption about to take place. Ideological intuitions overcame the stable schemes of generations of messianic thought. This approach infused the Rebbe's messianic activity with new energy. The Rebbe's point of departure in many of his writings is one of personal spiritual redemption. Being redeemed is associated first and foremost with individual intuition. The individual may have a sense of inner redemption and view himself as having shaped that redemption through his observance of the commandments as an individual. In that context, Rabbi Menachem Mendel favored a variegated allegorical interpretation of general messianic events. In the summer of 1975, he spoke of the verse, "Zion will be saved in the judgment, her repentant ones in righteousness." And Zion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveh b'tzedakah, basing his explanation on a conception of levels of the soul. Please look at source number 5. The explanation of the matter is that these two aspects of a person, that is, in his soul, which is a person's main part, the soul exists as it is beyond its physical clothing, the essence of the soul, the inwardness of the heart, etc. And the part of the soul that is clothed in the body, that is, in general, the visible faculties of the soul, the clothing, as it were, is called the foot of the soul. In this connection, scriptures say, okay, Zion shall be saved in judgment, her repentant ones in righteousness. Zion refers to the essence of the soul in the aspect of the inwardness of the heart, and in that aspect it is not captivity and enslavement in the realm of evil. Heaven forfend that matter, only the matter of exile. Not so with regard to the faculties of the soul, that they are in the aspect of being clothed in the body. For them the matter of captivity is relevant, and in that respect scripture says, her repentance, implying that they are literally captives in the realm of evil and will be redeemed by righteousness. In the light of the hierarchic structure of the soul, one can distinguish two situations of exile. Exile involving a fall into the world of Evil, the Klipot, and exile in which there is no such fall. The upper level of the soul, the Neshama, experiences exile, but its transcendent nature is not affected. Later, Rabbi Menachem Mendel was to argue that, I quote, the Neshama was from the start not subject to exile. End quote. On the other hand, the lower level of the soul, the nefesh, the faculties clothed in the body, the Rebbe says, experiences the exile and thus fall into materiality. These ideas have several implications for the dialectic of exile and redemption. One, exile is not a homogeneous phenomenon. One may be exiled from the first level of the soul, and one may be only partially exiled from it. Two, exile is first and foremost a phenomenon of the soul, a personal affair. Hence, the primary significance of redemption is also on an individual spiritual level. And three, release from captivity, a formative motive of Chabad Hasidism, and Chag HaGeulah, is also included in the redemption from exile. Redemption of the material soul means its release from the Kalipot. Redemption is thus the restoration of the soul to its original position, the elevation of its lower level to primacy. In Kabbalistic thought, we know that Kabbalists divided the soul to a few levels, and we actually feel the lowest levels of the soul, but actually there are also highest level of the soul, and these highest level did not experience exile at all, because the highest levels of the soul are connected to God all the time. So the exile was only partially on the soul. The soul experienced exile only in its lowest degrees. Nevertheless, the Rebbe never explicitly detached personal redemption from society as a whole. On the contrary, he went on to extend the psychological implication of his message to the Jewish people as a whole. Zion, as in the verse, referred to the community of Israel. In the same degree, he also reiterated the revelation of divine presence through the performance of the commandments as an expression of redemption. General and personal redemption are interdependent. He told his audience in 1991 that, quote, in order to achieve perfection, revelation of the kingdom of the King and Messiah in the whole world, the universal redemption, there must be the same thing in the worship of men, on personal redemption, end quote. Personal redemption is thus the key to universal redemption. The presence of personal redemption in the Rebbe's writing is an indisputable fact. The psychological levels are also associated with messianism, may also be inferred from the Rebbe's frequent reference to the presence of the Messiah in each and every Jew. Here he invokes the five-fold division of the soul, which I talked before, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida, and he says, please look at source number 6, and I think it's the last one, right? Just as the Nasi, the head of Chabad is called Nasiim, is called presidents. Just as the Nasi has the aspect of the general Yechida, Messiah, Yechida is the highest level of the soul, of the generation, who in our generation is the Rebbe, my teacher and father-in-law, that means Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, the Nasi of our he was the Nasi of our generation, so there is in every Jew the aspect of the Yechida, that is in the Nefesh. Accordingly, since the Yechida is the aspect of the Messiah, it follows that every Jew has the Messiah in him. The Yechida, literally mean the soul, single one, is the upper level of the soul in the post-Zoharic Kabbalistic literature, as I said before. The Yechida is the source of the Messiah's soul. As taught by Reb Shneur Zalman of Leadi, the Yechida reflects the divine spark that is the origin of the soul in Ein Sof, on a level superior to that of the Sefirot, even beyond the Sefirot. Since the soul of each and every Jew includes a level of Yechida, it reflects the Messiah's soul. Hence, on the highest psychological level, a person may experience redemption despite the fact that being still in exile in both body and soul. Moreover, the Messiah is not a figure of the future, an object of our expectations. The Messiah is present in every generation. He is, in fact, the officiating Admor. Taking part in the Messiah is not a transcendent act, neither does it involve an effort to achieve a different reality. It implies a dual awareness, an awareness of the Hasidic leader, the Nasi, and one's highest spiritual dimension, the Yechida. There are two aspects of the idea that redemption is focused in the soul. On one hand, the meaning of redemption is active essence to the highest level of the soul. Redemption depends on the ordinary parts of the soul being raised to the level of Yechida, the reflection of the Mashiach. On the other hand, redemption does not necessarily mean psychological activism. It concerns an awareness and sensibility for the highest level already presented within the soul. Action in the real world became an epistemological revelation. In 1991, the Rebbe declared that the exile would be nullified by, I quote, a revelation in oneself and emphasis of the neshama, which is above exile and is in a state of rest, a kind of Shabbat and rest for external life. I think I'll summarize now what we have learned now. If we take into account the activity of the Rebbe, we find a personal of a redemptive type. There's no doubt that the Chabad Hasidim shows that or think that the Rebbe was actually a kind of initiative Messiah, if not Messiah itself. The form of the communist nations, another event that actually encompasses the whole world, make the Hasidim of Chabad thinking of the Rebbe as actually a personality that belongs to redemption, that belongs to Messianism. And there's no doubt that the Rebbe himself saw himself as a major figure in all these events. So, and even if we compare it to the tradition of Chabad, we know that the seventh Admor is actually the last Admor. So there is no doubt, there is no debate that the Rebbe himself belonged to Messianic personality. How he belonged? This is an argument between Hasidim themselves, between researchers, but no. No doubt that the Rebbe actually belonged to redemption. I would just say that, and please stop me if I finish, because I'm used to a note of 5 minutes more. There was an interview in Makor Rishon with me, and as you know, that the reporters search for key sentences, and so the interview opened that every Chabad Hasid is actually a Messianist, because every Chabad Hasid thought that the Rebbe is the Messiah. This is what the reporter took from our from the interview, and. Afterwards, I had a very angry phone call from the from Rav Menachem Brod, and the phone call opened with a sentence. I guess that you are Yodea Machshavot, that you knows all our you knows all men's thought. Yeah. So I answered right away, Reb Menachem Brod, I'm not Yodea Machshavot, I'm dealing with text, not with man. I mean, Kodesh Baruch Hu, he knows what man thinks, I know what man writes. Well, this phone call, we stay friends. I mean, we became friends and everything is okay. So please don't leave here with, with inappropriate thought. But however, we agreed that in every future Messiah there will be a presence of the Rebbe. This is a sense that he actually used that style. In every future Messiah there will be a presence of the Rebbe. Okay, so we close the deal and everything is okay. However, there's no argument that the rabbi belonged to the redemption. But if we see, if we analyze, in a close analysis, if we look at his ideas, we see that he was very moderate. All these patterns that actually Jews in exile has almost all the advantages of the geula, of the redemption in exile, this is a very moderate thought. To be in exile and to be redeemed and to be free is a very usual pattern, because the soul experiences redemption, because you can be in Eretz Israel without being spiritually in Eretz Israel, without being physically in Eretz Israel. So you got all the advantages of redemption and enjoy the exile, enjoy with bracket commas. Okay? So there is a division between the personality, because the Rebbe belonged to redemption by his action, and thought. Now, we see the same pattern. We see the same pattern in the 13th century in Rabbi Avraham Abulafia. Rabbi Avraham Abulafia was a very strange, if we say, Kabbalist. Not our usual Kabbalistic ideas. But Rabbi Avraham Abulafia was a very active Messianic personal. He has very active Messianic personality. He wanted to meet the Apiphyor, and you see in the 13th century the meaning of such an act. It's not a diplomatic process of today, of reaching the Pope, right? So he wanted to meet the Apiphyor. He was a very Messianic personality. However, his thought was very moderate, because he was a Mekubal that adopted the Maimonidean patterns very seriously. He indeed absorbed the idea that the goal of man is a spiritual goal, is a spiritual immortality. So there was also a tension between the personality and the ideas. I pointed on this matter first in a conference that was in NYU. I think it was 6 or 7 years ago, and afterwards Elliot Wolfson wrote a complete book about it, and he developed the matter of Rabbi Avraham Abulafia and his closeness to the Rebbe. But I think that we learn a very important thing from this analysis. We learn that personality and ideas are not necessarily the same. A man can act in a certain way, but think in another manner. Yep. That means that every thinker is in a little bit a politician. I mean, he thinks one thing and he acts the other way, because reality is different. So I think that in a manner that the Rebbe also fits this pattern, and I think that that teaches a lot about man's natures and ideas. Thank you.
People have questions or gentle criticisms.
You're claiming that he was moderate in his views, but he differed radically from other people, because, first of all, other rabbis, like you mentioned, like, no, I'm not very wise. You know, they always said, like, fine, the Mashiach is imminent, but it was always just enough years ahead that they wouldn't be called on. Anyone who ever predicted the date for the Mashiach was always 50 years in the future, 100 years in the future,
no.
But not like whatever years they put on. But he's claiming that in his generation, and then he gets around the problem that he's wrong by redefining redemption. I mean, it's not redefining, it's really on the Kabbalah, but giving a different definition of redemption as a personal redemption, as getting out of prison. It's all sorts of personal redemption as opposed to a natural redemption that we can obviously see never being true.
First of all, messianic expectations were always in the near future and not in the far future.
Right.
Because
in the future, but not in their current, like not in 6 months, not in a year. It was always just near future, not.
I don't think this is the pattern. If we take, for instance, Abravanel, I mean, we know that his messianic expectation was certainly in his days, but he also explains that redemption actually begins 40 or 50 years before, and it actually step by step becomes the final redemptions, and therefore he explained his days in accordance. So
it's always the beginning of it's a dawn, but it never actually comes. So then he's going, so the Rebbe is going and then redefining.
Yeah.
The redemption is.
Therefore, I try to explain that the Rebbe tactically prepared an answer for your question, and the answer he gave was that we are actually in a spiritual redemption. We are actually in a process of redemption right now, but it goes out to the external world step by step, and not by one movement. So he saw himself, you know, personality, in his personality, he saw actually the events of the worldly events as a step by step the revealing of redemption. But actually, the redemption starts some decades before.
Redemption starts like with Rabbi Akiva. As soon as the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, well, we have the beginning of the dawn. Like, the redemption's been going on for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
But he's also radical in that he's different than, because he's putting himself, and like you said, that the redemption comes from above. Redemption comes from below. He's introducing a third element. You don't only need God, you don't only need the collective of the Jewish people. Now you need a third element, you need the Son. That's pretty radical too. I don't know if any of these other people who predicted Mashiach put themselves in and said, well, not only am I predicting Mashiach, but it's through me, my efforts.
Of course, yeah. Actually, he was a Hasidic rabbi, so he has to explain what did Hasidism contributed to this process. Hasidism contributed the freedom of the rabbis from prison. This was a contribution of Hasidism, and therefore the tzaddik take all this process a step forward. Yeah, by his ideas, but not by his activity, because in his activity, this time is actually different from past periods. This time,
ongoing.
It's ongoing. If you're considering his philosophy, if you're considering the development of his ideas. But if you're considering his personality, this is another game.
I was wondering if you could tell us when source number 6 about the ideas that was written.
Particularly, it was written when Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak was alive or when he was dead. Actually, it was published on the Sharei Geula, number 2. I don't have here the exact.
Did he continue to think after his father-in-law passed away? Did he continue to think of him as a messianic figure?
Of course. One of the patterns that we find again and again in Kabbalistic thought and activities is that the father or the teacher was Messiah since the generation. Was not fit for it, so the pupil. We see that Ha'ari was thought as a Messiah, and since he died very young because of the generation, so his student Rabbi Chaim Vital was considered by his pupils as a Messiah. So also we see the pattern here that yes, this is genealogy of redemption, if you might say.
But once somebody passes away, he's no longer. Then the mantle has to be passed on to someone else to be the Messiah.
Yeah, yeah. But when the Rebbe passed away, so either he didn't pass away, but we think so, it's for the Messianist thing. Either there is a resurrection, so. We know from Rav Saadia Gaon in the 10th century, we know that the tradition is that when resurrection occurs, the first one to come is Messiah ben Yosef, the Messiah who was killed in the Messianic battle. So so therefore, probably the Rebbe will come up in the resurrection. Either he didn't die at all, according to the science.
I just had a thought I had, I don't know if it has any weight, that in addition to
the
traditional stance, the Kabbalistic, the Hasidic, but this is a very American view of exile. It's a very rosy view of exile, right? It spiritualizes the territorial dimension. It sort of doesn't see a strong divide between pre-messianic and post-messianic. Which, you know, doesn't make sense when you're suffering pogroms in Eastern Europe, but maybe does make a little bit more sense when you're living a relatively tranquil and, in fact, you know, prosperous life in Brooklyn. So I don't know, it's just a thought that I had that somehow one senses the American context speaking here to some degree.
Yeah, but actually the sentence, for instance, Mach du Eretz Yisrael is a Tzemach Tzedek in
right,
Russia.
Right, I understand it goes back.
So,
and,
yeah, but, yeah. You're right in that the Rebbe actually gather all these traditions and make them make it all to a new messianic tradition. Exactly.
Weaving together the elements. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah.
No, I was just going to ask.
Oh, so you're going to ask. Okay.
I
withdraw my thank you in that.
No, within all Hasidic thought, there is a messianic sort of focus on messianism. So on the one hand, what makes the Rebbe so unique? And or my question is really, is it because of Lubavitcher, because of all the other work they've done and how big they are? They're all over the world and they're the most outgoing, I don't know what the word is, of Hasidim. So we associate messianism with the Rebbe of Lubavitcher. But really, it could be associated with many of the Hasidic leaders. And would the Rebbe himself see other Hasidic leaders or other people as a potential type of a Mashiach?
Yes. Okay. First of all, there is a debate about the reference of the of Hasidism to Messianism. There's a debate between Sholem and Tishbi. Sholem wrote that Hasidism is the neutralization of Messianic idea, and Tishbi presented another reflections on it. However, this is not like a regular Hasidic movement. First of all, the name movement. You don't find a Gur Hasidism, for instance, as a movement. This is a group of Hasidism. You don't find Alexander Hasidism or as a movement. Chabad is a movement. Now, it became a movement because the Rebbe turns it into a movement. This was the result of the Rebbe's activities. So the personality plays a great role here. You cannot compare it to any other Admorim in the force of the personality. So therefore, Chabad is an exception by belonging to Messianism. It is also an exception in referring to political views on Eretz Israel. Everybody knows it. But the personality plays a great role here. And the astonishing fact is that there is a difference, totally difference, between the personality of its and of its thoughts.
I just had a quick comment, as you mentioned about, you know, whether Chabad Hasidim were particularly focused on Shia. So I believe there's, I never looked it up, but there's, maybe you can help me with where it's from, but the Gemara that speaks about that really every Hasid or Talmud going back into Gemara's times would search for a leader that they felt was the Mashiach. It was like a thing that every Talmud should believe his Rebbe is the Mashiach. And if you don't think he's the Mashiach,
to
find another
Rebbe.
In the Gemara, that it goes back a long way, that, you know, searching for a leader that may be the possibility for a righteous Mashiach. So it's an older idea, but I think it was more. What's that?
Where's that Gemara? You don't know.
I can email you. I have your email address.
Okay. I think you meant that a man has to learn, but. With a Rebbe that he is like an angel, Malach Hashem Tzvakot, but as a Messiah, I don't think there is.
I was in Italy a couple of weeks ago, and we were in Florence and Venice, and it was very striking, the mainstay of Judaism in these cities. And both in Florence and Venice, there are pictures. It was actually quite, you know, jarring for me, of the Rebbe with the sign, the Mashiach. And the people all there, especially in Venice, they walk around in the ghetto, the kiput, or Yechi Adonainu Moreinu. I know about the messianism, but to see it in your face, how really they all think it's totally is the Mashiach, and that's what the signs were. So that's very interesting. So I want to, in that sense, for me, it was a very current topic, and I want to thank you and for your interesting and enlightening explanation, overview of the whole issue. And I want to wish Dr. Lowy, who doesn't believe in the spiritual Machdu Eretz Yisrael, he's going to the real Eretz Yisrael. And Bezrat Hashem, a week from Monday, he's making Aliyah. So I want to wish him and the family Klita Yafa, I don't know what the exact expression is when you go to Israel. And all the best. And we will miss you here in Toronto, but we can connect spiritually. But you'll have the physical advantage of living in Eretz Yisrael. So I want to wish you all the best. And you're here on a visit. You'll be going back in a week. Okay, very nice. And if, I think we can make a Marv Minyan. We have so many who were saying Kaddish, so I think it would be... Right, do you want to...
You daven plug.
We can still make a Marv Minyan if there are people... it's not if people would like, but I figured... Okay, and thank you very much. Refreshments here.